The next one is 1911. During that time period, from the time the ballpark opened in 1909, the next 6 years, the A's won 4 pennants and 3 World Series. So it was an active time, and there was a lot of interest. You can see in the background, fans on the rooftops and on the roof above the porch. There is a street, 20th Street, that runs between the right field, below 22-foot, right, 12-foot, rather, right fence, where some people are sitting. And you can see fans in the outfield. And, of course, you can see along right field there, Philadelphia's finest, the police line up just to make sure everyone behaves. But something else I have to point out on this one, down on right field fence by the foul line, there is a gate, a large gate. Now, that was the only gate that vehicles could use, so that dignitaries that came in a car or something would come through that gate, so they would have to come on 20th Street, and we would get close up on them at that point. Now, this is a new World Series. It's quite similar, but one thing I might point out is that if you look at the front bedroom, second story here, you'll notice that most of the people have removed the windows. You have the fans sitting in the front bedroom where we have these taxis, say, a better view, few of them be obstructed. Some of the seats in the ballpark were, of course, obstructed too. This is a picture of Connie Mack with Bucky Harris, the Washington manager, Boy Wonder, Mack, later called the Grand Old Man. Here, you'll notice, of course, that Mack did not wear a baseball uniform. He not only wore civvies, but he was dressed as a gentleman, a dignified gentleman, and he conducted himself and as a prosperous gentleman. And although he was not independently wealthy, Mack did live well, and also washed his pennies. And that was a part of the reputation that Mack had, as well as being a successful manager, at least off and on over the years. Because what Mack had done after the championships that I mentioned was to sell off his stars, and A's there for a time had sunk into the second division in the standings. But around this time in 26, Mack was again starting to build his team. And by 1929, at a time when the Yankees were the dominant team, they were a dynasty, they were the best team of all time. There was a lot of excitement about the Yankees, but now, after 28, when the A's had come close to matching the Yankees, here in 29, the A's are leading, and this is an August 7th game, an afternoon game on a Wednesday, in which Shy Park had the largest crowd to date for a doubleheader with the Yankees, and the A's were beating them by 10 games. So the A's, they split that doubleheader, but the A's went on to win by the pennant by 19 games over the team that was perhaps the best team of all time. So needless to say, and I think one of the poster sessions emphasized this as well, needless to say, there was tremendous excitement at that time among Philadelphia fans. And this is one of my favorite pictures, by the way, even though those of you who may look at it very sharply will know that the image is actually reversed over the true image, but the picture is still the same. It does show the way things were at that time. You will even notice that there is a billboard along one of the houses. There were actually, I think, two or three that had them. Now, at this time, the neighbors got together and decided, for a variety of reasons, that we needed to have stands, regular stands, not just makeshift ones, erected on the roof. And we needed a better way of getting people up on the stands rather than go through the bathroom and up a ladder. So neighbors got together and decided they would build these stands and have also a set of steps going from the backyard, stirred steps going up to the backyard to the roof. So they went ahead and did that, and they spent right before the World Series. There had been a lot of controversy with, and problems, if you will, with management at Shy Park and with the various bureaucracies in the city of Philadelphia, Department of License and Inspections, the entertainment tax people, and so on. But the leading official said there will be no fans permitted on the roof of 23 houses for the World Series. So that was the position we faced. This will show you a couple of days after his statement. These stands on the World Series, of course. And these stands held about 80 people each, and there were about 25 homes on the block. You get about another 15 or so in the front bedrooms. You'll notice also now that no people are sitting on the front, on the roof over the front porches, and no people sitting with their feet hanging over the roof. So there were some concessions to safety at that time. But also, from a financial point of view, we used to charge 50 cents during the regular year at that time. I haven't been able to find out, maybe some of you know, what we charge. I've seen figures ranging from $7 to $25. My own thought is it's probably $5. But I don't really know. But assuming it was $5 and getting approximately 100 people, three World Series games in 29, not to mention 30, 31, but just in the 29, we earned more money, or as much money at least, as my father's salary for the year. So it was an important business for us. It also, of course, took away from the business for the park. At a time when to sell out was in the World Series, it wasn't a big problem. But during the year, it was a problem, and there were legal battles quite frequently, which management usually lost. At least they didn't get what they wanted. There were some restrictions, but they couldn't prevent us from having people on the roof or stands on the roof for charging them. This was also the 1929 World Series. People started lining up 2 days before the opening game of the World Series, because you could get bleacher seats for $1, but not reserved. You just had to wait in line to get them. Some people were waiting to get tickets, some people were waiting to sell their place in line. But first in line is Mrs. Kratz. Mr. Kratz was the pharmacist at 21st and Somerset Street, where we went, and she has the Rockets here, there, as you can see. And there was, of course, a lot of excitement. I put this one in to show again the two, or at least two, of the Yankee stars, Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig, and two of the A's stars, Jimmy Fox and Al Simmons. There were controversy about who was better, but they're all in the Hall of Fame. The reason I put the question mark by Al Simmons was because when I originally saw this picture, it was mislabeled. It had been labeled as Mickey Cochran. Some people don't recognize him. Quickly have forgotten him. Of course, that's why Sports Illustrated said a couple of years ago in their story about the 29 A's, where they had a picture of Al Simmons on the front cover. Al Simmons, by the way, like a lot of players, lived in the neighborhood during the season. Al rented a room and one of our neighbors just a couple doors away from us. And so we would see him often. And in fact, my kid brother, Jerry, often had the job of waking Al Simmons in the morning because Mrs. Conwell did not want to go into his bedroom. And if he slept, Al slept late, she'd say, Jerry, you better wake up, Al. So he would scoot up, go into his room and say, Al, you've got to get up. If you want to win a batting title again, you've got to get batting practice. And he would sit there and be kind of a good luck charm while he was talking to Al, said, I was getting dressed. We knew a lot of the players, and not only the players, but my father's friends with the groundskeeper and the trainer and a lot of other people that worked in the park or hung around the park, if you will. In addition to baseball, there were also a number of other activities, including political. There were very several presidents, one of them, this is President Roosevelt, and he drove down our street in the open car. But the one that I think of is not President Roosevelt, but President Hoover when he came, because my aunt's boyfriend drove the car, was a chauffeur, drove him from Broad Street Station over, drove through that gate I mentioned, dropped off the presidential party, and brought the car over to our house. My parents and aunt got in the car, and they drove around the streets, waving to all the neighbors. So we had a good time in those sometimes. In 1931, although the neighbors had agreed to stick with the 50-cent charge, same as the bleachers charge, one of the neighbors who rented the house dropped the price to 25 cents. The next door neighbor decided to block that by putting up a fence. That was quickly declared illegal, and pretty soon, because of competition, everyone had dropped the price to a quarter. So we were now charging a quarter, half the price of what it cost. That, of course, upset the manager, coming back to management even more. And so, by 1935, they decided, despite our best legal efforts, and not an agreement to put up what's called a spike fence to block here you can see it there being constructed, and here you can see it in the foreground as some of the neighbors take a look at it from the rooftop. Next two I just threw in to show this in 43. No billboards, no signs, advertising signs at all in the park. One of the poster sections had a good bit about advertising signs, and I thought this would be interesting to show this, that by the last game in 1970, this is what the park looked like, and it wore the Valentine Spear scoreboard and the Longines watch, which some people claim was they used one they got from Yankee Stadium. There was a bit of a, that doesn't seem to be true, but there's still some controversy about it. Conemaugh's statue was dedicated in 57 across the street in a park, and moved later to Citizens Bank Park. Also, there was a Wall of Fame, which had both Phillies players and A's players at one time. Today, it has nothing to Phillies players. The A's players were moved initially to the Philadelphia A's Historical Society, and that, sadly to say, closed just last month. And that's a great picture of some of the memorabilia from the Philadelphia A's. Funny street today, actually, here, so though, just so I show you what the houses look like there on the street today. Still a nice, robust neighborhood. Where the park was, there's the Evangelistic Deliverance Church, which occupies that site. And I got to meet the daughter under the name of the clergyman that built that church. There are still rooftop bleachers in Chicago, and I may not, this is a, I can't, there's another one, and various fines, of course, and I saw ads for seats there for $79, but I understand it can run much higher than that, and they also often include quarter main meals. It is their rooftop partners where people actually buy the tickets from there, from Grizzly Field, and they share the proceeds. However, Tom Ricketts recently, has said that he's going to move from Grizzly Field if the city doesn't approve a renovation, the $500 million renovation that he wants to make, including a on-call scoreboard and audio screen, video screen rather, that will block the view of most of these neighbors and will bring in about $50 million a year. So a lot of things have become, the advertising and the TV. At one time, people didn't even want to have radio at the series. We had Pathé News, Fox Movie, Tone News, and Universal News cameramen on our roof because they would not let them in the ballpark. They were afraid that people could see the baseball game in the movies the next week. They would, why would they bother coming? You know how TV and radio have changed since then. So that's basically my presentation. I do have, I did write a book about it, and I'll put in a plug for it if you don't mind. It's called Bleachers in the Bedroom, and I added it to Swamp Pool Irish Economic, I'm not sure why, but it's about what things were like at that time, and it's available on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. So with that, I'll turn it over to questions, if people have questions, and we have a helper here, so I have the questions, I think.
Were there accidents? Did the roof collapse or did people fall?
No, I don't think the roofs ever collapsed. And of course, once the stands were put up, it was much safer because when you're standing on the roof, I've never heard of it happening. I was there and nothing like that ever happened. And I don't even remember any injuries, although I'm sure there must have been some. I do remember someone throwing a cigar off the roof and they put in one of the awnings and they put it on fire. I do remember kids used to play on the roof a bunch of people, even when there was no game, we went up on it. I remember some kids got hurt sometimes, shooting bows and arrows down, or trying to stop off the roof, things like that. Some kids will do.
If you're in batting practice or for the games, was there a problem of baseballs going through windows?
Not, they didn't consider it a problem. The only baseball I remember getting was one that came in our house. It bounced through the screen door into the living room. Some kid ran in to get it afterward. My grandfather was like, "Get out of here." But the management were very good about repairing any damage that was done. And the one damage I remember, which was just, because we never had a window broken. Our next door neighbor, Lou Gurry, put one right through the transom, the transom, and that had a number, 2741 on there, and they replaced it right away. But Mrs. Bush said, "I don't think that number was right. I don't like the way they did it." The next day, Lou Gurry put another one right through the same transom. So she didn't say anything after that. Yes, in fact, some of the neighbors made lemonade, hot dogs, so on. I got put in Bruce Cooper's book for was on the roof one time, and the man said, "Kid, go down and get me a hot dog, and keep, here's a dime, keep the change." So I went down, instead of keeping the change, I thought, buy two hot dogs, so another one, like a dime instead of a nickel. So when I got up, you know, I said, "Is anyone, anyone else want a hot dog or a dime?" He said, "You got them down the street for a nickel." I said, "Well, go down and get one." That's what everybody had that list, but she kept being smart. And, but somebody bought it, and he put it in the book. All the kids were doing it. Nobody else was doing it. It's just one of those things that happened. And some people were cooking hot dogs and selling for nickel. One of my friends said he made a bucket of lemonade, one glass, and passed the glass around, sell it for nickel. In those days, they did do that. But yeah, there were people made money. My mother didn't think that she had enough time to do that kind of stuff. It was bad enough having people trooping through your house, you know.
Were there any scoreboards put up on the roof? Yeah. Could people keep track of the scores? You couldn't see it, right?
I don't think so. You know, it was very common for people to buy a newspaper with a scorecard in it, and to get daily news for 2 cents, a bulletin for a nickel, which would have a separate nice scoreboard for it. But no, it was common for people in the street to hang around and to ask things like, "Who's ahead? What's the score? What happened?" That kind of thing. And or even, you know, you wouldn't even be watching the game all the time. My father came in one time and said, "Lou Gehrig's hit 4 home runs. He's up for 5th time. Jack, you gotta go see this." So, you know, I came out and he hit a long drive at Al Simmons saying that it was the 5th time up. So those kind of things happened. Yes.
What kind of reactions did your various neighbors have to that spike fence? I mean, they must have been really angry thinking about, you know, here it is, they're imposing on us with all these games and everything, you know, kind of messing up the neighborhood.
Yeah, I'm having a little trouble hearing. My hearing, for some reason or other, even though I'm a young man,
how did your neighbors react to the spike fence? I mean, they put it this way, they weren't thinking the spike fence change like this.
Well, you know, by then, you know, they didn't like it, but there was no thought of any violence or anything. It just annoyed. It was, business was so poor by 35, and it didn't make a lot of difference. And it had gone on so long, we figured it would eventually happen. That we wouldn't no longer be able to do it. People had lost interest in the A's by then. Connie Mack had sold the Stars again. They had sunk down. They weren't yet playing in the best place, but they weren't going anywhere. So, this
was
one of the things.
A number of people from your neighborhood sued Connie Mack for the spike fence.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And Connie Mack won, and for those who live in Philadelphia, his attorney was Richardson Dilworth.
Well, you know, I said that, and somebody said Richard Dilworth wasn't old enough to be doing that at that time, but so I'm not sure, but that was my memory, because my father had said he would not vote for Richardson Dilworth when he ran for mayor or governor, even though my father was a Democrat, because he was a representative of a tribe when they put up that spike fence. So people did have long memories.
Please give Jack a round of applause.
Sheet for the timeline of what different things happened. I put some in the back, and I don't know how much to pick any of those up.
We'll start our next presentation in 5 minutes, please. 5 minutes.